Welcome to Family Law Talk, presented by Kirk Stange of Stange Law Firm, PC. Stange Law Firm is a family law firm in the St. Louis metro area with offices in Missouri and Illinois. Now, here's your host, Kirk Stange.
Welcome to Family Law Talk. My name is Kirk Stange, and I am one of the managing partners of Stange Law Firm, which is a family law firm with multiple offices in the St. Louis metro area in Missouri and Illinois. Today's topic is an interesting one on Family Law Talk with Stange Law Firm. The topic is tips for testifying in family and divorce court. It's a really interesting topic. It's based on an article on our webpage, StangeLawFirm.com, titled 10 Recommendations for Testifying in Divorce Court. So as a follow-up to today's podcast, you can go to StangeLawFirm.com, hit the Articles tab, and you can see the article titled 10 Recommendations for Testifying in Divorce Court. Definitely an interesting topic and one in which I think would be very useful to the listeners out there. Today I have another attorney at my firm on the phone with me, John Kirschman. John, you on the phone with me today?
Yes, I am. How are you today?
Doing great. Well, we're going to get into the topic today because obviously, you know, a lot of folks out there, you know, might be in the midst of a family law case, and they're probably worried about the idea of having to come into court and testify. And for the average folks out there, this isn't something they do every day, and can cause probably a great deal of kind of stress in terms of how do I behave, how do I act. It's kind of similar to going into a social setting maybe that you don't go into every day, and so you just feel kind of uncomfortable. And I think that can cause a lot of people that have to come into court and testify the case to kind of freeze up theoretically, or you know, just come in and not put their best foot forward. So what we're going to try to do today is go through 10 simple recommendations for testifying in divorce court. Before we get to that, I should state that I always do that the choice of a lawyer is an important decision that should not be based solely upon advertisements, and that the information you obtain today in this episode is general in nature and it may not apply to specific factual or legal circumstance. Therefore, if you require specific legal advice or if you have a particular trial coming up, you obviously want to hire an attorney who's licensed and competent to practice law in your jurisdiction so that that way they can give you specific advice to your case. But what we're going to do today is try to go through some kind of general tips that I think just about any attorney would probably agree with are good tips overall. So we got 10 of them. We're going to go through these today. The first one is tell the truth. John, tell the listeners why telling the truth is pretty critical, pretty fundamental in testifying in court.
Yeah, I think this is pretty fair to say that this is important to do across all areas of your life. It's something I tell my own children on a regular basis. If you're not telling the truth, then you have to continue to not tell the truth to cover up, well, the lie. And in court, that will just people think that if you have something bad, that they shouldn't say it. But oftentimes, you're just better off saying it and move on. If you lie about it, it's just going to destroy your credibility in front of the court. And even when you're telling the truth, people may not. Certainly, the judge is going to doubt everything you say from that point on.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, a lot of people out there have, I think, misconceptions at times. You know, they see that Jim Carrey movie, Liar, Liar, and they think, oh, my goodness, you know, what I do is not tell the truth. But obviously, you know, you got to tell the truth in a family law case, and or in any case for that matter. You're under oath. You got to tell the truth. You could be charged with perjury. I mean, you got to tell the truth, and that's
right.
What leads to the better result, right? We all got skeletons in the closet. Everybody's done something maybe they don't feel great about, but you're better just to lay it out there and let it be what it be because, right, you lie and the judge or jury figures out that you lie, then your credibility can be shot. So that's pretty key. The next one we have on our list is listen carefully to the question asked. So why is that important, John?
I think, among other things, it's oftentimes human nature to just want to respond very quickly, that you start to hear what somebody's saying and you want to just predict or presume what they're getting at and you want to answer the question. And then in this setting, it's particularly important to listen carefully to questions so you give a precise answer, among other things. I know oftentimes I'll recommend people even count Mississippis in their head. It feels like it's taken a long time, but it's actually very quick. And that gives you time to really contemplate everything that was asked and give your attorney time to object if necessary. But you, certainly you want to make sure that you are giving a full and complete answer to a question you understand.
Yeah, I think that's totally true, and yeah, I think the Mississippi technique is a good one, where you tell your client to count to two or three Mississippi before they answer. That way, they, you know, they make sure they understand what the question is, and they versus just kind of shooting from the hip with you know, statement that they put just a little bit of thought. I mean, just a couple seconds worth of thought into what they're going to say before they say it. That way, it comes out how they want it to come out, and that's definitely true. I know in interviewing a lot of attorneys at trial, you know, a lot of witnesses want to interrupt you before you're even done with the question.
Yeah.
Like they're so excited to answer, they just want to blurt something out, which is definitely not a good thing.
Right.
But sometimes they might answer stuff that I'm not even asking, you know, and they open up doors that maybe I wouldn't have gone down. The next one is seek clarification if needed. Why is that important?
Here again, to make sure that you're answering the question appropriately. I think folks are often just worried about feeling stupid. I think anybody is. They're like, oh, I don't want to look dumb in front of everybody in the court. And I'm like, I'd rather look as dumb as possible. If that's what it takes to make sure you understand the question, there's no one is going to penalize you for saying, I don't understand what that person just asked me, or I'm not sure if you're asking me. Even if you need to clarification, are you asking me if that chair is brown? Then yes. If you're asking me if it's black, then no. I mean, you're better off taking the chance of looking stupid than just not answering a question correctly.
Yeah, and I think this is definitely true for the nervous folks out there. I mean, some of you probably know who you are. A lot of people thrive on speaking publicly and being in front of people, and a lot of people, frankly, makes them very nervous. And I always worry about the clients that you know, might be extremely intelligent and very smart people, but they're just not used to having to think quickly on their feet in front of other people. And I think those folks particularly have to be careful that they make sure they understand the question, and they kind of slow the game down, so to speak. It's not a sprint. So slow it down, make sure you understand the question, and then give the court a good answer, one that's accurate. I think that's definitely true. It's a good thing to ask for clarification. The fourth one we have on the list, just kind of working down, is when ready, answer the question and only the question that's been asked. And why is that important?
That's important there's a couple of reasons. One is you risk, of course, not answering the question specifically, or opening the doors to things you shouldn't be opening the doors to. And I think sometimes people hear a question and they think they know where it's going next, and they want to add context or they want to explain. I think the pitfall for a lot of people there is they end up interjecting an opinion, which I call that like a Judge Judy thing. If you ever watch Judge Judy, she's fine when everybody's just stating facts. As soon as they start interjecting their opinion, she gets pretty aggravated. And I think that's what happens here when you don't answer the question.
Right. And a lot of people do that when they don't, you know, maybe the question's one they don't want to ask. And so they get that question coming their way. And, ooh, boy, that's one they'd rather avoid. So they try to kind of divert and answer something different, which isn't the question that was actually asked of them. And, you know, a good attorney's not going to let a witness do that anyway. I mean, they're going to instruct the witness to or at least seek the help from the judge if need be, too, to have the witness answer the question that's been asked of them and only that question. And that's definitely definitely a key piece. Yeah. Let's see. So the next one, and I'll just say this as well. Oftentimes, if I ask a question of a witness and they answer something different, I'll just ask my exact same question again and just keep asking it until I get an answer.
Yeah.
And, right.
It hurts their credibility when they do that, right? And they're not answering. And it goes back to that credibility.
Right. I mean, I keep asking it if it's a relevant question, I'm going to keep asking it until I get an answer from it. The next one is don't volunteer. Which is definitely an interesting one. And what do you say about that?
Yeah, it kind of mirrors the previous one. It goes to some of these others, just listening carefully. I mean, it's they just build on top of each other. Here again, you want to be in control of your testimony, and if you're volunteering, it could be detrimental and opening doors that maybe your attorney doesn't want to go down among other things.
Yeah, I think this is definitely true on cross-examination as well. Cross-examination witnesses that are being cross-examined by attorney, you know, oftentimes what they feel like, if it's opposing counsel in the case, they feel like if they tell opposing counsel this critical fact that they're going to convince that attorney that they're right about the case and that attorney's client's wrong. Right. I mean, I've had clients through the years that come from that mindset, and of course, you know, they're forgetting that an attorney's a professional, and the professional's got to represent a client. And so even if you give that volunteered information, which you think is fantastic, and that's going to change their mind, I mean, a professional attorney who's representing a client, I mean, that's not going to sway them in the middle of a trial. And, right, you can open up doors that maybe that don't need to be opened up. And so, right, I mean, don't volunteer. Just answer the questions that have been asked and leave it there. And if your attorney thinks there needs to be a follow-up question or something else asked, I mean, a good attorney's going to ask it, and definitely not wise to volunteer. The next one's an interesting one because I think the next one, number six on the list, is one that a lot of people think is almost – you know, kind of a wrong thing to do. It's almost kind of like a politician kind of move. But, I mean, yes, no, I don't know, or responsive answers. And the I don't know one is the interesting one that I'm talking about in particular. I think a lot of witnesses are afraid to say, I don't know. So what do you say about that? Why is yes, no, and I don't know? Why are those responsive answers?
Yeah, that's true. This is one of my favorite ones. It's something I go through with clients in depth, that it's perfectly okay to not know the answer to a question, or to not remember something. You know, if you don't know, you don't remember. I think people get so nervous, and they're again so worried about whether somebody has what they think of them, that they have to just really struggle to answer something. And it's just, you're better off if it's a yes or no question, just answer yes or no. And if you don't know, make it clear you don't know. It just makes your life a lot easier, and it's perfectly okay to not know an answer to something.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, if you don't know, but then you throw an answer out there and you turn out to be wrong, then you can get yourself into big trouble as well, and somebody might assume that maybe you weren't telling the truth at all. So if they, you know, if somebody asks you on what date did X incident happen, and you give the wrong date, and maybe it's just because you don't remember the exact date, and so you give a date, it's the wrong date. I mean, a court theoretically could conclude that you weren't being truthful, and that maybe you were trying to mislead. And so that's where it's really important that if you truly do not know the answer to the question, then I don't know is the proper answer. And of course, you know, an attorney who's asking the questions, if they've got some document or evidence or something to refresh your recollection, then that attorney can show that to you. And then maybe, you know, in the midst of a trial, something you didn't know, now your memory's been refreshed and now you do know. And so if you know, you've got to answer the question. But right, I just think guessing on the stand is a problem. And simply saying, I don't know, is better if you're not sure, because that can get you in a lot of trouble, cause you to lose a lot of credibility with the court, where maybe you weren't even attending to be evasive. I think a lot of people are resistant to say, I don't know, because, you know, they see politicians and maybe athletes, you know, testifying before Congress, giving answers like that. Right. It just doesn't feel good to them. On the other hand, obviously, you don't want to say, I don't know, over and over and over again. If you know, that's bad, too, and that's not truthful. But if you don't know, you don't know. All right. So the next one kind of falls into line with I don't know, which is number seven, which is don't guess or speculate. And why is that important?
Yeah, folks are probably starting to see a theme here, how credibility is everything here, and that's one of the themes. You just want to maintain your credibility. And if you're guessing or speculating, and one, especially if you're trying to, you know, give expert type opinion, or what should be left for an expert opinion, or again, you're just taking a stab at it, it's just going to hurt your credibility later on if it's just not your own firsthand experience. And, it's just, it goes back to just say, I don't know. And that's the end
right.
of that.
Yeah, I give a kind of a concrete example of the times I've seen happen in cases too. Home values comes up a lot of times in cases. So I've had a lot of clients through the years who'll be asked either a deposition or their trial, you know, what do you think your home is worth? And, you know, clients aren't appraisers. And
right.
You know, that's some clients might have – yeah, and some clients might have a sophistication level where they're maybe – you know, they're paying attention to other homes going for a sale in the neighborhood, and maybe they're a little more educated, so they have a little bit of an idea. And so some of those clients can might be able to give a range to a question like that. But some folks, and I'm probably this type of person myself, I mean, if another house is for sale in my neighborhood, I'm not paying attention to that. I'm not pulling the brochure out of the, you know, the
right.
the little thing they stick in your yard that gives a sale price, right? I mean, I don't look at that, so I would have no idea,
right.
Really, truthfully. I haven't paid attention since I bought my house a long time ago. And on the other hand, my wife is probably more educated, I think, in terms of what other homes might be going in the neighborhood. But again, I mean, so you get a question like that, what do you think your home is worth? And if you truly don't know, don't guess. I mean, don't just throw out some number, because you could throw out a high number that's inaccurate or a low number that's inaccurate. And that could end up having a big bearing on the property division in your case. And so, you know, if you don't know, I think it's just a fair thing to not guess, not speculate, simply say, you know, I'd have to get that house appraised. I don't know just off the top of my head what that'd be worth. So I think that's a pretty big key and a pretty big piece, and really a court really can't or shouldn't hold that against you if you truly don't know. All right, so moving on to number eight, which is watch out for compound questions and for a wrongful summation of the facts. So tell the listeners why that's important.
Well, hopefully you get an objection at an attorney from this, but it doesn't always happen. Oftentimes these things are going so fast, the line of questions are coming out, and the attorney might summarize a completely different set of facts or part of the question. And you're in that moment and you're just answering questions really quickly. One, if you go back to some of the other tips early and you're just slowing down and you're listening carefully, you'll catch it. But if you get caught up in that moment and you're you could end up answering the question as if the set of facts that the attorney asking the question are true, and it goes back to then hurting credibility.
Yeah, and I think this goes right to, you know, in lawyer land, where there's an objection to trial cause, assumes facts, not evidence, that the question assumes facts, not evidence. So, and attorneys do this all the time with witnesses, and right, an astute witness can slow this thing down and point it out. I mean, just give you a hypothetical situation. I mean, an attorney could ask a question like this, which is, well, sure, on the night that you were drinking on X day, you were arrested that evening, weren't you? And so that question assumes that witness was drinking. And if that witness wasn't drinking, they could say, well, listen, on that night I was arrested, but I wasn't drinking. So, I mean, your question assumes I was drinking. I wasn't. And there's no facts put on that point to show that actually happened. And so, you know, I mean, the compound and the wrongful summation, it's like a couple different concepts, you know, lumped together. You know, I mean, an attorney could ask a question along the lines of, you know, that car worth $20,000, who did you sell it to? Well,
right.
There's two questions there. Right.
Yeah.
You just, I mean, it was lumped in that car was worth $20,000. So maybe it wasn't worth $20,000. So, you know, a good witness is going to say, okay, well, listen, here's who I sold the car to, but listen, it wasn't worth $20,000. And a lot of witnesses would just blurt out who they sold the car to, which then leads, I think, probably a court to conclude, oh, that, I guess that car was worth $20,000.
Right, right.
Now, a good attorney should jump up and protect their clients in these situations and object that the question is a compound or it assumes facts, not evidence. But the witnesses need to be astute, too. So that is definitely a good one. And then moving on to number nine, we've got avoid getting boxed in with everything you know or remember or absolute words like no, never, and all. So what does that mean, and where we're going with that?
Yeah, those are that's you always want to keep yourself would have some wiggle room. I mean, if we're talking to folks, you want to have wiggle room while you want to box in the other side. And you know, what I'll say is, you know, good words are generally, you know, the people like to say, I always take my kid to school, and I'm making something up. I always take my kid to school at 8 o'clock in the morning. Always. Yeah, always. I mean, if you ever had a time, you know, I know maybe, oh yeah, there was that time you get up late. I brought him in at 8:15. So those are things you have to be careful. You're not always, all it takes is one time you didn't do it, and say, well, you don't always do that, do you? generally, here's what I do, or that's where people can get themselves into a hole. If they're saying, I always do this, and, oh, I never do that, and then there's just, all it takes is one example, and it goes back to the theme we've had here. It could really destroy your credibility.
Yeah, no question. I think a lot of attorneys will try to, I think if you're time crunched at trial, you're trying to get the case done, a lot of attorneys will be pleased if the witness talks in absolutes like that, no and never and all, always, and because it moves that trial along. But right, if you say you never drink, and actually over the course of the last year you drank 3 or 4 times, right, you know, which it wouldn't be a lot of times theoretically to drink in the course of a year, so 3 or 4 times you had an alcoholic beverage, but you testify that you never drink, right, your credibility is shot. So you have to be precise and careful with your words, and not overstate something or understate something. And I think, again, a good attorney is going to help the witness out by, you know, when I see an opposing counsel ask these types of absolute questions, I mean, normally I'll object not limited in time or scope,
mm-hmm.
to make sure we know what
right.
time frame we're talking about. You know, what time frame are we talking about? You know, if the
right.
questions like, do you ever drink? Well, you know, objection, not limited in time or scope. And what are we talking about? 2014, 2013? I mean, what?
Right.
What
yeah.
are we talking? Right. I mean, but a lot of attorneys are just trying to move that trial quick. They love those questions because you paint with a broad brush and you get the answer you want and you move on. And but definitely can be a problem for the witnesses. That gets us to number 10, which is be respectful and dress for success. And why is that important in the courtroom?
Well, you only have one shot at this. I mean, that should be your thought. And show that you care. I mean, you want to make a favorable impression. You want the judge, the trier of fact, to find you credible. And it starts with showing that you care, showing that you have respect for the court, for the system, and also it projects a sense of not just caring, but that you want to. I think that's just really important. It's just showing that you care, and showing that you care, and that this is meaningful to you is a huge part of it. And coming dressed appropriately, you could tell. The looks on judges' faces, you see people coming in with T-shirts, hanging out of their pants, and it just says, you know, I don't care. This doesn't really mean anything to me. You can end up with a result that reflects that. And
yeah,
be courteous to everybody. I mean, that's a key thing, too. You just never know. You see, you don't think anything of a clerk, and maybe you mouth off to them or you give them a snide remark, and, you know, that person is really close to the judges. Be courteous and show you care.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely true. Well, I think this is definitely an interesting topic here today, and obviously we're just kind of brushing the surface in terms of testifying in court. And obviously, you know, any individual out there who has a court case and might end up in the family court testifying, obviously it's critical to get an attorney and get somebody who has trial experience and who can give you specific advice regarding your case. But hopefully, in a general sense, we've put some good tips out there. And a lot of this is, I think, pretty obvious in some ways. But once we kind of get down the list, past the first couple, I think some of these might be something that a lot of folks haven't really thought about. So we want to thank all the listeners for coming online with us today and listening to Family Law Talk with Stange Law Firm. I want to thank John for coming on the phone with me, and stay tuned for our next exciting episode with Family Law Talk with Stange Law Firm. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Family Law Talk with Kirk Stange. Visit StangeLawFirm.com for more about today's topic or to put Stange Law Firm to work for your family today.